Gray Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Gray Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. It is Friday, July 16, 2004, 10:04 a.m. on the Central Coast of California, and it's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, we're taking your calls all day, well, all hour. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, then click on Send a Message. I'll be giving out that contact information again when I invite your participation right after the Geek News in about 15 minutes. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks, John Tracy, owner and operator of FeltonGames.com, and Sean Cleveland, technical marketing communications manager for Transmeta. Geeks, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, your voices actually sound okay. I'm hearing now that
Lyle's
voices,
got walking pneumonia.
Yeah,
so if he sounds a little groggy, please forget him. Forgive him.
No, yes, thank you. Today.
Don't forget him.
Today, we are taking calls. We'll be doing that right after the news. But first, let's do some news. Sean, I think I'll start with you, sir.
Yeah. Big news this week was Bill Gates' prediction that the DVD player will be dead within 10 years.
Now, hasn't Bill made some other predictions in the world? Like you'll never need more than 64 megs of RAM?
Right.
640K, I thought.
I think it was.
And there's no future in the internet.
That's a passing
fad. So this is just, I mean, you got to take this as read.
Maybe he had the long-term view. Maybe he's looking 100 years down the road.
When the species is gone because of the sun exploding, internet, no more.
No more. So, yeah, he questions how ridiculous it would be for people to carry on music and movies that are stored on silver storage discs since they can be easily scratched or misplaced. But he doesn't talk about what's going to replace them.
Yeah.
He said certainly people will not be watching TV on DVDs in 10 years.
Does he know something we don't know? I mean, does he have something that is just sitting there and that ready
house,
to come out with logs?
All I can think is the house he lives in must be amazing.
Wait, Lyle, your comment? Maybe he's just sitting on something and he's just waiting? When has Microsoft ever just sat on something and waited until it was ready? They always release it before it's ready.
Okay, so...
And he says the TV of tomorrow will be integrated with the PC, and they'll recognize users and know what they like to watch as soon as they sit down in front of them.
You know, we already have part of that with the TiVo.
And has it replaced your DVD collection? Do you have any DVDs?
Yeah. We still have a lot of DVDs because not everything you want is playing on the TiVo at that time.
And, of course, you can't copy your DVDs onto your TiVo because that's illegal.
Right.
So there's a little bit of issues there. Okay, well, what's going on in the DVD realm, though? Is anything happening that should show us that, you know, are sales plummeting from his speech? Or
actually, prices are plummeting. Makers of DVD recorders in Taiwan, Lite-On, who provides... Lite-On IT, I should say, who provides the DVD players or recorders for Walmart stores, Amustech Systems, and a few others, Sony, Toshiba, they're all talking about price drops over the next year. So you should be able to see retail prices drop. I mean, they were $1,000. A drive was $1,000 when a DVD recorder first launched.
Right.
Lately, they've been in the $200 range.
And so we're going to see that drop even more.
$100 to sub-$100 range.
So you might want to wait for 3 months before you buy a DVD.
You know, I went to PriceGrabber.com recently, and I found an NEC 8X DVD recorder that records plus R and dash R discs at 8X. And it's OEM. It means it doesn't come with a box or manuals or anything. It's just the drive in a box. And I got that thing free shipping and no tax for $74. So,
and
I mean, if you go out there and look around, you can find these things for $100 right now.
Are NEC drives pretty good?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great drive. I haven't burned a bad disc yet. It's been readable on everything I've tried it in.
I also want to welcome right now to GeekSpeak. We have Sean and John in the air room with me in California, and from New York, Dee Dee Hubbard. Dee Dee, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, guys.
Dee Dee!
We miss you.
Miss you guys, too, and everybody out there.
All right. Well, go ahead and butt in on the news if you have anything to say, Dee Dee, and we're going to keep going with that. John, I'll go to you, sir.
eBay is beginning to plug itself into the digital music market. eBay, which is known for its online auctioneering, has announced that it'll allow a select group of its customers, by customers it means sellers, to begin selling digital music files over the website as part of a test. It's a 180-day program, so, what, 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
6-month program. They don't go into the details of where the music originates from, but they are going to be watching all of the testees to make sure they adhere to all the digital copyright music laws.
So conceptually, this would be for people that are producing themselves.
Or who legally obtain music and then want to resell it.
Uh-huh.
So they offer a webpage that people can go to download the music, or they will be offering a webpage that people can go to interact with the sellers to download the music. They're trying to cut into this market. Apple Computers has had over 100 million transactions. I assume that
songs.
Means songs sold.
Yeah.
So other vendors have been rushing in to jump on this market.
Well, I mean, Apple is selling their songs for about $1 a piece, which means $100 million. I mean, that's some
right.
money.
So if the auction started a penny each and then they get bid up to, you know, up to 99 cents or whatever.
Now, is maybe this for auctions or is this for direct sales? I'm not sure.
I'm not quite sure. I've been trying to find some more information on it. I can't find anything that specifically says whether these are up for auctions or whether they're actually pioneering a music download site.
Right. Okay, but eBay is trying to get into the music business, which makes sense. It's a big online business. Okay, thank you, John. Sean?
I've actually got some local news. People might remember Meridian Data in Scotts Valley.
That's strange. I thought they were in Monterey. I don't know why I thought that.
No, they were in Scotts Valley.
Okay.
So they disappeared. They sold.
Does anyone know what happened? They went out of business?
They sold the company to Quantum.
Okay.
And Quantum, Quantum spun them into a subdivision called Snap Appliances because their product was the Snap server.
I didn't know Meridian became Snap. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
All right. Well, back on track. Yes, go on.
In fact, I worked there. I was quality assurance.
Right.
Helped launch the Snap. That was kind of cool. But, and I left before that. So Snap did pretty well with Quantum, and Quantum sold its hard drive division to Maxtor recently. So Maxtor sells the Fireball. Kind of weird. But now they have sold the Snap division to Adaptec. So that happened this week.
So now, is there any office still on the Central Coast for Snap?
Oh, yeah, it's over the hill. Adaptec's okay. Over the hill, too.
All right, so
it's
they're kind of
Silicon Valley.
All right.
Yeah, San Jose.
Well,
so,
that's good.
Yeah, anybody interested in what happened to Meridian Data and what's going on with that? That's what's happened. That's happened.
Adaptec. Thank you. John?
I've got a little bit of space news. July 15th was the 180th day that Opportunity was on, I'm sorry, Spirit was on Mars. Which means it's doubled its expected lifespan. Originally, they were put up there to last for 90 days. It's now gone 180.
I hope I double my expected lifespan.
Really? I hope you do, too.
Thanks.
I hope we all do. we're two generations from that, supposedly.
There's still Opportunity still inside Endurance Crater, running up slippery slopes. It's actually been able to go up steeper slopes than they thought it was. So
it can get out. It just hasn't chosen to do so.
Right. They're still finding a lot of things. They have a bunch of different substrata they're looking through and, you know, basically playing interplanetary geologists there. And Spirit is still roaming around in the Columbia Hills looking at different things. So
why don't we have, like, I'd almost watch it for a couple hours a night. Kind of a real-time footage of the bots crawling Mars. You know, it's kind of like...
They move so slow, it'd be like
an alien.
What's that, Dee Dee?
What happens if you find aliens? Then they can't deny that.
Oh, that's true. They need
you're
to have the.
In real time.
That's true. They need to have the denial factor. Thanks for clarifying.
It has to be like on a half hour delay at least.
Right. Well, and of course that would be pretty easy to do. It's.
I thought everything was done like that after the Super Bowl show,
you know?
Yeah.
If you were watching it, it would be pretty boring because there's a lot of downtime when they're uploading information or downloading programs. And then there's a lot of time when their engineers are just trying to figure out, well, what are we going to do now? And if it gets into a situation where they're like, this could potentially lead to something that might possibly damage the rover, then they spend, you know, several hours figuring out exactly what to do with their pet rover.
That
days.
Sounds like The Apprentice.
Sounds like The Apprentice?
Yeah.
Explain?
You know, you're not sure what's going to happen. You can burn your groups for hours and hours before you actually get anything done.
All right.
huh, that sounds like my job. So, you know, what's interesting about this whole rover, this idea, is they should put the animations up online, on their website.
The animations?
Like, speed them up. Like the video playback of the rover crawling across Mars.
Just sped up.
Yeah, so you can at least see, you know, what it's done. I wonder if they back up very often.
They do have a lot of, like, maps and such. You can find out what their trails have been and such. Pretty interesting stuff. John, thanks for updating on that. Yeah. Dee Dee, do you want to give us your... Why don't we, since you don't have the news stories per se...
But she does.
What's that?
She sent one yesterday. Dee Dee?
Oh, yeah.
Please go ahead.
I don't know if you've dropped the ID bomb yet, but Doom 3 has gone gold.
Say it again?
Doom 3 has gone gold.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what's Doom 3?
Should be coming out in stores August 5th, I believe.
And it is a game.
Doom 3, with... Every geeks have been waiting for like 2 or 3 years now.
This is the next version from Carmack, or you know, from Game God John Carmack.
Basically, the first person shooter was
Doom.
And since then, it was Castle
Wolfenstein. And then it was followed by Doom 2. Yeah, it started with Castle Wolfenstein, then Doom 2, then Quake.
And I think Quake 2, Quake 3. It's due to make its first appearance at for a tournament at QuakeCon. So before anybody ever gets a chance to play it at home, they'll be able to compete against each other on this new game at QuakeCon.
So
it's kind of like the movie Wizard.
I thought Doom 3 was only a single-player game.
You can have multiplayer up to 4 players, I believe.
So they're going to do a tournament style at the next con.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's pretty exciting for us geeks out in the world. We're going to have to do a... When that comes out, we're going to have to do a
party. When and where is QuakeCon? And can you join it online?
It's in Texas, I believe.
It's in Texas.
Yeah. Mesquite, Texas? I'm serious.
Yeah, that's where it is, I think.
Yeah. And you probably can join it online, I bet.
Well, you won't be able to play it. I mean, you won't be able, because 3 won't be out by then.
That's true.
Sean, your next story for Sir?
Yeah, if you're worried that there isn't going to be enough... computers out there for Microsoft to get Windows on.
Mm-hmm.
Think again. Currently, there are 600 million PCs with Windows today. And according to Microsoft, by 2010, they expect more than 1 billion of them.
Wow. That's a lot of computers.
Wait, who's expecting that?
Microsoft is expecting more than 1 billion computers to have Windows
and
by 2010.
And most of them will have DVD drives.
That's the question, isn't it? That would be hilarious. So, they expect demand to come from enterprises and developed countries and you know, sizes, all companies, basically, tailoring Windows to specific needs. So
thank you for that, Sean. John, sir.
Apple has recorded a significant increase in their profits. Last year they made $19 million. This year they made $61 million.
Wow.
Their total sales went from $1.5 billion up to $2 billion. They cite the iPod and iPod Mini as the primary reason.
Wow.
Last year they sold 304,000 iPods. This year they sold over 86,000 iPods. I'm sorry, 304,000 iPods last year. 860,000 iPods this year. And they're having a problem getting enough iPods out the door. Actually, they're having a problem getting iPods and iMacs and G5s out the door because chip manufacturer IBM has not been able to produce the chips as fast as they wanted. They think they switched over to 90 nanometer technology for the die size, mm-hmm. when they're making the chips. 90 nanometers is how big the circuitry, the pathways are on the chip.
Transistors, yeah.
Right. They have not been able to produce as many G5 chips as they had hoped. So, therefore, Apple...
Right. They're having problems with heat dissipation.
I don't know. That's up for debate. That's one of the theories, is that it's heat dissipation.
But basically, IBM's not giving enough chips for Apple to sell the computers as fast as they
want. And it's also delayed the next iMac, which Apple has finally announced that, yes, it is going to be a G5 iMac. Apple has officially announced that.
Right.
They have said that it is due to the fact that IBM has not been able to produce enough of these G5 chips at the speeds they want. In order to release the iMac yet. So they're letting their current generation iMac go away. They're not going to have the inventory to continue selling it through the beginning of the school year, which is really strange because that's when Apple usually makes a killing.
Right.
And then their G5s will pick up, G5 iMacs will pick up again in September.
Thank you very much, John, for that.
I have to agree with you, John, that, yeah, it's all speculation as to why they can't make these chips. But
you're right.
A good educated guess would be that that they can't get the speeds they want because the chips are too hot. They're running too hot at those speeds.
No, they're making the chips. They're just not making enough of them.
Right. They said it's a problem. Said it's a problem on the die. They're not getting as many.
They're making a lot of chips. It's just that, yeah, there are a large number of them that aren't usable.
Right.
Because after you make a chip,
at the speeds they need them to be at correctly.
Right.
So, and this is the same problem that everybody is having.
It's an interesting thing when you're making a chip. You never know exactly how many. You have a large wafer. It's about a foot in diameter. About 30 centimeters.
Right. Yeah, they're going to 300 millimeters, actually.
Oh, okay.
That's what everybody wants to go to, which is about 12 inches. But right now, they're about 6 or 8
300
inches.
300 millimeters
about
is 30 centimeters.
I guess the ones, yeah, right. I guess the ones I saw were about 30 centimeters.
300 millimeters is 30 centimeters.
Right. And which is a foot.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it's about a foot. So
they're having a problem when you cast that, when you wash it many times with different layers, you put masks on it, that's what makes the chips. You're not always sure that every one of those dies has gone properly, and so you have to test each chip.
Yeah.
And so they're finding that on these disks, there's more dead chips than they had hoped.
Right.
And that, yeah, like Sean was saying, a lot of them can't go with the speed.
You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Trotzel. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, and from New York, Dee Dee Hubbard. We're taking your calls. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to geekspeak.org with your browser. Click on the Geeks, and then click on Send a Message. Again, that's geekspeak.org. And on line one, we have Amber from Seaside. Amber, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi. I called you last week, and you were helpful. I had full version of Microsoft Office Professional Edition 2003. You said it was okay to go ahead and try and install it, but when I did, they said I needed to have a higher version to install it. So if you have any comments on that.
A higher version? Can you tell us what the error was?
That's all they said. They said that it wasn't installed. I needed to have a higher version.
Who's they?
Well, that's what the screen...
Okay, all right. Well, it looks like then what happened is the version you have on your machine is more up-to-date than the CDs you have.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little strange. That means that the version that was installed on your machine is different than the CDs you have. And that means... odd things happen in your home or when you got it installed from the OEM. They might have given you the wrong disks.
It wouldn't even install.
Exactly. What you can do is uninstall the version you have, but then you're kind of backtracking on the versions that you have. I don't know how you got a newer version on your machine than is on the disks.
Well, I wanted it at a seminar.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
You need to find an Office disk that is as current as the one that's on your machine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the solution I have for you, unfortunately.
Okay.
What's your second question?
My second issue is, and I'm a novice, so this may seem very elemental to you, but to me...
That's okay, there's lots of things.
When I try to email a photo attachment,
mm-hmm.
I get an error message that says we cannot locate, cannot locate POP server.
Okay.
For some reason, I can't email photographs that are absolutely listed in my photos.
But you're normally able to email other things?
Text and so
okay.
on, yes.
What's probably happening is the ISP that you're using,
mm-hmm.
When you're trying to send a message, you're saying that you can't
send it. It sounds like the SMTP.
No,
I can't locate POP. And forgive me, had it all written down.
Is that another email that comes back into your inbox?
It's an error message.
Does it check your mail or when you send a message?
When I try to send a photograph.
Okay. When you send a photograph, does the message seem to go all the way, and then a little while later you get a message in your inbox that says, sorry, there was an error? Or is it right away coming up with an error?
Right away. Immediately.
Okay. That means that email address was incorrect.
But I'm sending AOL or Yahoo.
And are you sure the email address that you're entering is correct?
Excuse me?
Are you sure that the email address that you use
absolutely,
is correct?
Absolutely, because I get text messages and other messages from them.
You mean you send them text messages? Can you send them text messages?
Send and receive, for AOL.
All right. They might not be set up.
So this is what's going on. The receiver of that message, the POP account, the receiver of that message, basically, that server is not allowing that size of attachment. You're sending an image that's too big.
Mm-hmm.
So what you need to do is decrease the size of that image. And there's a myriad of ways to do that. Do you have an image editing software package on your machine?
I have the Fuji. I got the Fuji Digital, and then I have Adobe.
Okay,
it came with an Adobe
Photoshop.
Software. Pardon me?
Photoshop, Adobe Photoshop?
Yeah, but I don't think it's the full version. It's
right,
just
that's fine.
Probably Learning Edition. Any Adobe Photoshops will work. So what you want to do is you want to open Adobe Photoshop,
uh-huh.
and then open that file from Adobe Photoshop. Open up that file, and what will happen is it'll come on the screen. You'll see the whole thing. And then go up to, anybody quick, does anyone recall the name of the menu item that Photoshop to resize image? No.
Photoshop, iPhoto.
It's you want to go to image.
Right, image, and then resize, and image size.
Oh, image, okay.
Okay, and once you're in there, there's a few things. It gets kind of confusing, but basically the very top of that dialog, it's going to show how many megabytes it is.
Mm-hmm.
You want that to be, like, under a meg.
Less than a meg.
It'll say 1M.
Right, it'll say 1M or 4M. You want it to say, like, lower than 1M. Or you can go ahead and go into, like, 133K, which is smaller than a megabyte. And when you go into when you get to that size, it'll probably email no problem. Okay, so the way you change it to get to that size is on the bottom of that dialog box is a little checkbox that says resample image. And there's a type of resampling. Just leave that alone. But this little checkbox says resample image. And once you see that, there's kind of two, when you have that checked, there are two sections to enter in sizes. There's the top section and the bottom section. The bottom section is going to say probably inches left, width and height inches.
Resolution.
And then resolution. What you want to go ahead and change is the height and width. Change that to a smaller height and width.
Okay.
When you do this, though, you're losing data on the image. A good rule of thumb is when the resolution says 72, the image being about 4 inches wide will make it definitely small enough to email. Now, once you've done that, once you save that and say okay, the image will be resized. Do not save that image, because if you do that, you're losing information on that image. Mm-hmm. You want to keep a good copy. So now go up to the dialog box and go to save as.
Save as. Or if you have a newer version of Photoshop, do a save for web.
Right.
Okay. And that'll let you even make it smaller. And
once you do that, you just make the size, the same photo name, and then say for email or something, right?
Okay.
And then go ahead and try to send that message.
Or if you don't remember all this, just go to Help and go to Photoshop Help and type in changing image sizes.
Okay.
We'll probably do it.
It'll tell you how to do it.
Well, this, I think, is going to be very helpful. I'm going to try it. And if I may, I'll call you back next week and let you know what happened.
Oh, thank you, Amber.
Or if I have another question, hopefully you can help me from there. And I do appreciate it.
We look forward to the call. Thank you.
So I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Didi, did you have something else to add to that?
I was just about to say that it's generally a good practice to reduce the size of your images before emailing them, because then it's a lot of times if you're downloading pictures from your digital camera, the resolution that it stores pictures in is quite large.
In fact, they're designed to be printable, so your screen is much less resolution than a print, and therefore, if you're only viewing it on your screen, you might as well make it smaller.
Yeah.
But trying to print that image will totally fail. So that's why you need to keep that original.
Yeah.
There should be like a really simple, for email, save for email kind of thing in Photoshop or some application. That would make this work pretty well. I'm not sure if there is. We're going to go on to the next call from Santa Cruz. We have Anne. Anne, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Our pleasure.
I have two questions, and one is personal and one's for work.
Let's do the personal one first.
That was my thought, too. You mentioned the iMac that's coming out in September or whenever, being a G5. That was a big question, I guess. And I'm looking to get a new Mac, and I'm trying to decide between an iMac and a tower. And the reason that I'm kind of looking at the iMac is because I live in a small place, and I'm tired of having so much equipment around. It looks bad. And I was also thinking that I could move the iMac if I wanted to watch a DVD, say, mm-hmm. On the couch, I could move it.
So yes.
That was my thought in looking at the iMac. But I never like to get the first iteration of anything, and so that's one of my concerns about the new iMac.
Then you might want to. Apple will be selling their current inventory of iMacs. Well, I don't know. Usually they sell them cheaper. They may not this time since they're going to be running out. You could still probably pick one up fairly inexpensively.
Are there any reasons that you like a tower more?
I guess I'm prejudiced because I think that there's more that you can do to them.
Well, I have a question for you. How mm-hmm. long have you had your current computer?
5 years.
5 years. How many times have you upgraded put new cards in, things like that.
Well, I did actually. I had to put in a USB card, so I did that.
Mm-hmm. Right, because your computer was before USB.
Yeah, I have a really old computer.
My recommendation would be to get an iMac. Apparently, yeah. Mm-hmm. You're by nature not the kind of person who upgrades their computer a lot, and you're not going to be putting a lot of other cards in it, which is primarily what a tower is good for.
Right.
If the new iMacs are coming out with a G5, that means the speed is going to be pretty good on them.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming they won't be dual processor, though.
No, they probably
won't. Probably for heat problems, they won't. Yeah.
Right.
Now, we don't know exactly what the form factor, meaning the case, looks like with the new iMac, but it's almost definitely to have a CPU and a flat panel attached somehow.
Yeah, and I'd love to have a flat panel.
So that means a lot less space in your
and
home.
Apple did just today release the 30-inch studio display, which means I have a feeling that they're going to be having some iMacs with some pretty large displays in them. Of course, that comes with a pretty large price tag, too.
But, yeah, right. I think the iMac would be a good choice for you. It also comes down to, what you're focusing on is having simplicity around it. That's really what the iMac's about.
Right.
So I can see it would be hard for me to buy an iMac, but at this point, if I were to buy a Mac for my home, I would probably get an iMac myself. And I'm very much a geek, and I like to update my stuff and do a lot of things to it. But the iMac is so sweet and clean, and you don't have to do anything to it, and you're set. And I typically have multiple computers, so if I want to play, I can use a Windows machine to play with. So I think the iMac's probably a good choice for you. Okay, what's the work-related thing?
I work at Cabrillo, and we have we're changing over to OS 10 Panther. And
finally.
Pardon?
Finally.
Yeah, I know.
I used to work at Cabrillo Computer
Resources.
Yeah, I
know that too. It took a while for various reasons. I mean, money and
right.
applications. So we use a program called RadMine to make an image of the installation to make it really easy to put that image on all our other lab computers.
Mm-hmm.
And what we used to do in OS 9, after making a change on the machine, you could go in and look at all the files by date, so you could see what files you changed, so that you would know which files were somehow connected with your installation, and you could make sure that those files were marked. And I was looking, I'm not real familiar with OS 10 yet, but I didn't see, I know you can have a column view of all your files, but I don't see any way to look at them by day and
you
time.
Can.
Yeah,
you can. There's the icon view, the three column view, and then there's the single column view. In the single column view, where you're
which
just
is called detailed view.
Right, detailed view. When you're looking at it in detailed view, it has all the details, such as the date, and then you can do the thing where you click on date modified. And
Now it's possible that date modified field isn't showing up in your detailed view. That's a setting you can do. So what you want to do is open up a window that has that, a Finder window, and then go up to View Options and check on what you want to show up as the columns, and one of them is going to be date. And you can actually put date and create a date and last modified date. So if you wanted both those, it's kind of nice. And then you want to make that setting true for all your windows of that nature.
Right.
Okay.
There's actually a nifty shortcut if you're using Finder windows.
Mm-hmm.
You go Command 1, Command 2, Command 3. It switches between the different views.
Oh, that's nice to know.
I didn't know that.
Didi, one of the many reasons we miss you. that's cool.
And any other questions?
Yeah, would that show every file?
It would show every file in a certain folder. But
Except for the hidden files.
But you can turn on hidden files as well. And you want to do that. Basically, to hide a file in Macintosh OS versions, you just append a dot to the beginning of the file, and it will be invisible. You can show most of the files. There are a few files that the system will not show you even in that view through the Finder.
Mm-hmm.
There's a setting, the file that actually sets up the Finder, and that's not viewable in the Finder at all. And that's kind of where the settings for each folder is saved. And it's called DD. I can't remember the name of it. What's the name of that thing?
There's
.data or something.
In the root directories, there should be a file. It's .hidden or something.
Yeah.
But I can't remember off the top of my head.
But there's great find features in Panther. And this is what you want to do, Ann, if you want to find files after a certain date. Do a find, and a dialog will do Command F, I think, basically, in Finder, and we'll get a dialog. And there's a whole bunch of choices on what you want to find. You could say find invisible or find non-invisible or just, find any file.
Mm-hmm.
And then also find dates modified after, blah.
Yeah.
It actually is called .hidden. It's under the root of the computer. And I'd recommend downloading utilities such as Tinker Tools or Cocktail.
Tinker Tools is very good.
You can allow certain users to see all hidden files as you could in Windows. It's just a hidden feature of Panther.
Yeah. So that's, I think Tinker Tools is a really good choice for that.
Ah, okay.
Well, thank you, Anne, for the call.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, now's the time. The phone lines are open. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can use the Internet. Go to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, and click on Send a Message. We're answering your calls. Stay with us.
This week on This American Life, Douglas had been a doctor, but he had some strokes and a kind of dementia. And in those moments when he was more alert, he did not understand.
A stroke is not what you're talking about.
Okay. But you did have a stroke, Douglas, about 8 weeks ago, where you couldn't walk, you couldn't feed yourself.
How many days did it last? Was I in the hospital again?
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
The phone numbers to join us, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This is GeekSpeak. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing Internet services including DSL, spam filters, PHP, MySQL. Now with nationwide access, information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. Dee Dee. Dee Dee? Oh, hi.
Hi.
John was curious, what is going on at school with you? You're in a program at NYU called ITP, which stands for?
Interactive Telecommunications Program.
And what interesting and fascinating things have you seen doing or seen classmates doing?
Well, I don't know if you all heard about the Pac-Manhattan craze, but that actually came out of this program.
Pac-Manhattan?
What is it?
Some people were trying to apply big game theory to Manhattan streets. So
cool. They
made some ghost costumes and Pac-Man costumes. And back at headquarters, you have controllers on cell phones calling the ghost and Pac-Man and
giving them the directions?
Giving them directions
and
feeding that information into a website so that people can watch at home.
And then how do you track where they are?
They wanted to use GPS, but that became a problem with latency and just the big buildings in New York City just kind of block out a lot of that. So they just went not necessarily old school, but you know, lower tech.
With the cell phone saying, I'm at Fifth and Vine.
So, and then it got really popular, and I saw it in various tech blogs and wound up in Wired magazine. There's a lot of really interesting things going on at ITP.
So were there actually, like, Powerball balls that Pac-Man can take and then go eat a ghost?
If you, at certain corners, if Pac-Man hit, a street post, he would become, you know, powerful Pac-Man, and then the ghost would be warned. And
I don't know if I could ever hear of a geekier thing than this. thanks for telling us about it. From Santa Cruz, Chris, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hello, yes. I had a question about if anybody's familiar with using iTunes on a Mac.
Sure.
I've been in the process of archiving my music CDs onto a hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already done that. It's, you know, taken the information from, I guess, Grace Note. But I want to try to go through and edit a lot of the different tags.
And they were assigned to you from the CD information, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Although I'm having difficulty since there's a lot. I wanted to do it in the fastest way possible.
How do you want to change them?
Well, one thing I want to change is the date. To have actual date of the, like, kind of compilations, try to fix the date so it's the actual date of the song rather than the date of the release of the CD.
Oh, I see. So for compilations, each song you want to specify the date.
Yeah, well, that's one thing I'm trying to to edit, but I noticed in using iTunes, I can only edit the song name within iTunes by clicking on it. which would be a very easy way to just simply click on it and then type the correct.
Have you done a get info on a file, on a song file?
Yeah, but the problem is that that takes longer. Like, you have to click on the file and then get info. And
so what you wanted to do is in the list view, when you have all the songs listed, there's a field that you can put up for date.
Right.
You want to be able to just edit right there?
Yeah.
Yeah, they probably didn't put that in there for...
When you're doing the get info view, there is a next and previous button, so you can navigate through there, so you don't have to keep closing the info box.
Actually, I tried that and it didn't seem to work. After the files had already been imported, it doesn't seem to identify what songs belong to what CD. Like, it won't go through when the next thing is shaded out. It doesn't let you.
So it's not saying it's part of that compilation.
It seems like you can only do that when the CD is in.
You can try. There's a part of compilation button. Make sure that's not checked.
Okay. Well, no, but I see what you're saying. What you're saying is Dee Dee, you want to go address it?
I recently went through iTunes and did that, Windows and Mac. What I did was, if you highlight multiple songs in the list view, either selecting all or selecting a few, it works better in, like, chunks of 10. So then the next and previous buttons will work. You can also adjust the properties of all the songs that you selected at the same time.
Right.
There's this little pop-up window that shows up the first time you do it that says you're about to edit multiple files. Are you okay with this? And I just hit do not display, and you can happily go and edit chunks of however many you want at a time.
So what you do is in the view where you have all your songs listed, you just hold down the shift and click on different files?
Right. Make sure that you're in the standard list view and not browse.
Okay, so click on the library on your machine, and then sort them the way you want to sort them, like maybe by album, for example, so that they're kind of together. And then you go ahead and you can select a few of those by holding shift or by holding the command key, which is the Apple key, and selecting them. And then you just do a get info on all those songs, and it's going to say, are you sure you want to edit the information on multiple items? You say yes. And then it's only going to show the information that's the same for all those files so far. And then you check next to which ones you want to change. So that's one way of doing it.
The nice thing about it is that once you've typed it in a certain way, if you start typing it, it will start finishing for you.
Okay. I think I hear, but the problem is, though, if you have, like, a compilation with all the songs are from different dates,
mm-hmm.
and you want to change, the individual files.
Go to that album, go to that and sort by album, and open the first one in the album. It should enable the previous and next buttons. I'm not seeing the situation where it's not doing that, so I'm a little confused to why you have a version that doesn't allow the next and previous. But most likely that's because of the view that you have when you open that get info.
Okay, so where do you change the view in the...
Good question. Dee Dee, you said there's not browse, so...
There's a browse button up at the top. It's the little rainbow-colored eye. It drops down this section which has artist, album, genre.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that's closed.
And so you just highlight the column for album and then.
Right, and then click on album column, and that album should be basically the very top, right below the like kind of status bar.
Okay.
This way, you know that you're looking at your entire library instead of just a subset of it that you selected through browse.
So don't use browse, basically.
So then you just pick a song, hit Command I, and the next and previous button should work, and it should take you through the list, however, which order it is sorted by.
Thank you, Chris, for the call.
Okay.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
Julia from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about, I am using a Mac, I'm on OS X, and I'm using the mail program to check my IMAP email account.
Okay.
Via a wireless connection.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using an airport base station.
Okay.
And I'm able to receive email through my mail program,
mm-hmm.
but I can't send it out.
Okay. Well, it's a pretty simple thing.
Okay.
When you are you the wireless area that you go to, it's like a coffee shop or something?
No, it's in my house. Actually.
Your house?
Yeah.
So it's connected to the same network as when you connect directly?
Yes.
Okay, that's a little stranger. Checking mail.
Mm-hmm.
is one server setting.
Mm-hmm.
Sending mail is another one.
Right.
The checking is a POP or IMAP, in your case, server.
Right.
And the sending is SMTP.
Right.
most likely you have the incorrect SMTP. But
right.
another possibility is that your Wi-Fi base station
yeah.
is not allowing mail traffic to go through it. I haven't seen that as a setting. I'm not really familiar with airport base stations.
Mm-hmm.
But that's possible that that's happening. Dee Dee or John, do you have any suggestions?
I'm looking it up on macOS 10 hints right now. You're not the only one having this problem.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, the other thing is that the other person in my house who uses this has a Hotmail account through UC Santa Cruz
uh-huh.
and is able. And I was wondering, is it IMAP versus POP or something like that?
No, it's not IMAP versus
Are
POP.
Are you getting a relaying denied?
No, I'm getting what it says is it can't be contacted, something like that.
Okay. I think there's a couple things that could be happening. Your ISP, who is your ISP?
It's SBC.
Okay, so I can't imagine them putting a block on this at all.
Yeah.
But see, sending mail is a big issue. Because most of the virus attacks that do kind of clog the networks and stuff are become their own SMTP client. So there's some stats like 50% of the spam you see actually comes from people's individual boxes that are turned on as like spam bots. And because of that, because of this traffic that happens from a machine becoming an SMTP client, there's some restrictions set up on SMTP sometimes. And I can imagine a system administrator saying, you know, we know about this computer on this network because she registered when she set up her account, and we know the MAC address of that network card.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we're going to allow that machine to send mail to this one's SMTP client.
Okay.
But all of a sudden, it's coming from a different source on there.
Yeah, right.
That's possible, but it seems a little improbable.
Okay.
Do you have another router on your network, or does this go through another router, or are you just using the airport as the router?
There's the airport base station, and then there's the thing that they sent us.
Their modem?
Yeah.
Is it a DSL modem?
Yeah, probably. I think so.
Okay. Do you have any idea if it's providing network translation?
Oh, I know what's going on. You're saying that you right now there's a modem provided
yeah.
by SBC
yeah.
that you then connect both a base station and your computer to?
Yeah.
Okay. What's happening is both those things are getting IP addresses from this from SBC Global.
Mm-hmm.
But SBC doesn't think you have two accounts. They think you only have one.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those is allowed to connect to the network, and the other one is kind of doing it illegally, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But so when you do an SMTP, when you're sending mail, it can't authenticate
that host. So mm-hmm. what's going on is you need to get a router that does the translation for you so that you have one contact point, one address from your ISP, and then you connect to that router multiple connections, and you have like an internal network. Mm-hmm. So you want to get is a home. You want to get a home router, and I'm not sure exactly who caused that error, but let's see if it's finished. No. All right. So we're gonna have to say goodbye to Julie from Santa Cruz. Thank you for calling Geek Speak. And Dee Dee, are you still with us?
Yeah. Bad noise.
Is that you, or do you think? Okay, well, in any case, that's feedback. So basically, the answer to Julie's question is get a home router. That way, your one IP address that's assigned from SBC will go to the router, and then the router will handle the traffic internally, and you'll be able to do what you need to do by sending mail from two different locations, basically.
Doesn't an airport handle that, though? Doesn't an airport do NAT?
Well, it'll do NAT, but she's not plugged through the airport necessarily. And besides,
because since it's going then to the right. Okay.
What's probably happening is that the airport is saying, I need an IP address from me. Oh, and I also need an IP address for this other machine that's connected to me.
Right.
So what's happening is that it's getting two IP addresses. The SBC thinks that you should only get one, and therefore it's not allowing the other connection.
Right.
Totally makes sense once dissecting it enough. All right. Our phones are working. The phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can go to geekspeak.org. We're checking our email diligently to find your questions and comments.
Oh, we are? Oops.
Yes, we are. Geekspeak.org. Click on the Geeks, then click on Send a Message. Fill that form out. We'll get it in our email, and we'll respond to you. Sean, do we have anybody so far in our email queue?
No.
Nothing. All right. And the phone numbers are open, 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. We're taking your calls, questions, comments about technology.
I actually have an item here. If you have a Netgear XE-102 wall plug Ethernet bridge.
Oh, yeah, I got one of those.
I got six of those.
Or if you have an Ethernet bridge by Netgear, just... You might go to their website and check to see if it's one of the bridges that's been recalled.
Okay, so Netgear bridge make sure to see if it's been recalled or not. Is it a security issue?
It's a potential electrical hazard.
Yee, bad. Even worse than a security issue, you could lose your home. Okay, so if you've got a Netgear bridge, is what they're called?
Yes, it's a Netgear XE102 wall plug Ethernet bridge.
Okay, so basically it looks like an Ethernet bridge.
It's like a phone line to Ethernet adapter.
Something
wall
strange.
Wall plug maybe for...
Power?
Or it's either power or it's going to maybe possibly be a
can I see that?
Telephone line.
We'll have to look at that a little bit more in detail to figure out what it is. But basically, if you've got a Netgear product, you might want to call their... Again, John, can you read that again?
It looks like it's Ethernet over power.
Okay. So some Netgear stuff, there's like two different connection points, and they actually, one of them powers the other one through the Ethernet line. And I guess that they did it wrong such that there can be a fire hazard, basically, which makes sense. That kind of technology is a little strange. It's part of the proposed spec for Ethernet. It's called powered Ethernet. But if you do it incorrectly, you can cause a danger, I should say. The phone lines are open, which is so rare on GeekSpeak. I don't know if this has happened for a long time. So give us a call. If you're in the 831 area code, you can use 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Of course, you can go to the web and go to geekspeak.org, click on the Geeks, then click on Send a Message. And we already have people coming in, streaming in, and I'm just going to go ahead and answer it without knowing who it is. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
See, that's what you get for just...
That's what happens. Dee Dee, you talked about the Pac-Man kind of live interactive thing that's going on in New York. Does this mean that the people that are running around are getting tired?
They stop after a while. They had a couple of games on Saturdays in May, I believe. They haven't had any games recently, but I think you can get more information at pacmanhattan.com.
Pacmanhattan.com.
Should still be up.
All right, cool. What about you? You're soon to have to pick a thesis. Are you leaning to anything?
I do have to decide what I want to do for my thesis pretty soon.
You mentioned one idea that you had yesterday. You want to go ahead and elaborate that again so we know?
Well, I have one job at working with the Ford Foundation,
mm-hmm.
now, helping them with web and other technologies and kind of...
Ford Foundation is a nonprofit granting organization that gives money to certain projects.
Right. And they're having me consult with them about various things. And one of the questions that came up from one of the departments was a way to keep in touch with some of their interns. They wanted them to be able to contact each other and be able to keep profiles that people can know where they are and what they're doing.
So kind of an extended community from the Ford Foundation interns to be able to keep kind of the relationship going around the Ford Foundation to some degree.
Right. And okay. I'm like, well, you know, that's what a lot of people use Friendster for, but Friendster is sort of going for a global market, not necessarily little situated things such as one little group of interns from a particular corporation, nonprofit corporation. So I thought, well, what if there was some software that you can just sort of download or buy or whatever and set up on a server yourself, which acted like Friendster? Sort of like more plug and play, like PHPBB, which is a really fabulous bulletin board,
mm-hmm.
Which you can just sort of grab and make your own little community with that. But a little bit more focused on the what makes Friendster so useful is the ease and the profiles and the little testimonials or whatever little fun things you can add to it. Just something to sort of keep little communities of people together, which brings the situated software thing, something that one of the professors here at ITP is really big on, Clay Shirky. Situated software being software that's not necessarily meant for mass consumption, but just something that really is key to a certain small community of individuals.
Mm-hmm. And so would you be actually producing this product?
In most theses, they expect you to come up with something that works eventually.
I love that program. I'm jealous. Art, welcome to GeekSpeak. Art, are you with us?
Hello.
Hello, yes. You're on GeekSpeak?
Yeah. I was just curious. I don't really have a computer, and my son had one, and he's moved off. And I kind of got into it on the gaming aspect of it, and I was just wondering the differences between. I'm looking to buy one, and they have the hyper-threading technology now and 64-bit. The differences within between them, and also what is it about those LCD monitors that every time you move your head, you got to kind of almost have to shift to be able to see those things properly before they get kind of like shadows in them.
Okay, well, let's address the simple one that I know the answer to. LCD monitors, the real reason why they've been kind of slow to adopt is that they're very hard to produce a wide viewing angle. That's what that's called. And so normally, to produce them, they try to get as wide as possible. And that viewing angle is where the prime location to view the LCD from. The better the LCD monitor, the brighter and the better viewing angle it has. So that just has to do with the quality of the LCD. Most current LCDs, you buy an LCD right now, it's a liquid crystal display. It's a non-television type display for your computer. All laptops use them. Currently, they're great. They have great viewing angles. In fact, they're pretty much the worst. I mean, really bad angles, you won't be able to see the data. But most good angles, you'll be able to see the data. And I say there's like bad angles and good angles to look at the computer. And it has to do with two things. It's the viewing of the viewing angle of the LCD, but it's also the way that you sit in front of your computer. If you're sitting at it from a strange angle and everything's kind of pushed off the side, it's bad for your posture. It's bad ergonomically. So you can think of it as kind of a good feedback system. If you're sitting correctly in front of it, it'll work for you really well. Your second question about hyper-threading in 64-bit, I'm going to go ahead and shoot off to Sean. You want to address that?
Sure. Hyper-threading is a technology that Intel has invented to take advantage of the extra processor power that their chips have. Well, all chips have at higher speeds. So basically, instead of just processing one thread of data from an application, you take those extra processing cycles and you execute multiple threads in parallel. And what that allows you to do is to crunch more data. But, of course, you have to be using multi-threaded software. Software that's designed specifically to work on more than one processor. And even then, that software has to be able to work on Intel's hyper-threading technology, because Intel's chip is just a single processor, but with the ability to run multiple lines of code.
Is that interfere? How many games are written with hyper-threading technology incorporated into them?
So it wouldn't matter whether I have something like that, like for gaming, stuff like that.
Not really.
Currently it wouldn't, but it's very possible that games in the future will take on. There might be 64-bit versions that would work well with Athlon 64, and there also might be versions that are right. Enable hyper-threading. But in general, if you're interested in getting a computer right now that can do good gaming, hyper-threading and 64-bit technology is not something
you're concerned about. The other thing is 64-bit.
Go on.
Oh, no, we lost him. Okay, so 64-bit is only going to work for you if you use a 64-bit operating system. You're not going to be taking advantage of the 64-bit features of that processor without software that is 64-bit. And for software to be 64-bit, it's got to run on 64-bit OS. The only 64-bit OS out there right now is Linux. And gaming is not going to make much of a difference. However, what I've learned, is with the Athlon 64-bit processor, there are other features in that processor that make it good for games. And I got to say, I am very impressed, because I've used a 3.2 gigahertz Intel Pentium 4 and a 3400 plus Athlon 64, and my gaming performance on the Athlon 64 is just amazing.
You didn't tell me that, Sean.
I just started doing this, and I want to write an article up for GeekSpeak and talk about this more.
Great. But, well, thank you, Art, for your call.
So you might want to spend the money instead of on hyper-threading and 64-bit technology on a better video card.
Yeah, the video card's most important.
That's really, the foundation of your computer for gaming is going to be about the video card.
And what's a good video card right now to get?
Well, ATI and NVIDIA are both about to release brand new video cards. ATI is the R800 and NVIDIA is, I believe, the 6800 series. Okay. They're not really out. They're going to be very expensive, like $500 cards. So you may want to look at maybe a Radeon 9800 or Enforce GeForce 4.
And we have a person waiting, Fred from Watsonville. Unfortunately, we're not going to get to you, Fred. I'd love to hear the rumor that you know about for the iMac and why it's being delayed. Please let us know, and we'll make an announcement next week on the show. I know I just want to take that call, but we can't. And Dee Dee, thank you very much for calling in to Geek Speak today from New York.
I had a lot of fun.
Great. We miss you. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. Grey Wolf Computer Systems has provided a grant in support of this program. Grey Wolf Computer Systems offers custom computer systems and personalized service for repairs, upgrades, and networks in the East Cliff Village Shopping Center in Santa Cruz. Excuse me. The geeks today were Sean Cleveland and John Tracy, and of course, Dee Dee Hubbard from New York. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland, and thank you all for participating on Geek Speak today. Geeks, Sean,
thank you. It's good to be here. What? Sorry.
I'm reading email.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, Santa Cruz, KDBH, San Ardo, or on the web at kusp.org. We'll be back next week, as we are every week, 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio on Fridays. Fine Print with Rick Kluffel is coming up next, followed by State of the Arts with Bonnie Jean Primch, and at noon, Two Steps to the Blues with Charlie Lang. For KUSP and for Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Stay tuned now for Fine Print.